What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink. We engage you, the listener, and interact on a different topic each week. We've got loads of good tunes, lovely music, and lots of analysis to keep you going.
And interviews from experts or you young people telling us what you think about our daily topic.
That's always the best part of the show, Jackson, to hear what the listeners have to say. There's always lots of juicy comments and lots of different perspectives. Absolutely,
so stay tuned. Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you, all of you, for joining us today. Now, technology affects every facet of the human experience, from how we work, how we communicate, to affecting our health, to our relationships. But historically, human relationship with technology has never been on the levels we've experienced in the last two decades alone. Our societies have been fundamentally reshaped by our interaction with new technologies that emerge to solve challenges that man has struggled with since the beginning of modern civilization. Technology is generally a body of knowledge and tools designed to solve issues or problems in our society. And the word technology was first used by Joseph Bigelow, a teacher in the early 1800s, and he described it as an application of sciences to the useful arts. Technology and its uses have evolved as man continues in the pursuit of knowledge of how to make life a little easier. And because of the constant innovation in this field, tasks that used to be difficult and time-consuming are now quick and easy. Innovation is basically understanding that you have a problem and then working towards resolving it. Now, like I said earlier, technology continues to evolve as we continue to innovate. And we have now reached a point in our civilization where we understand that technology and innovation are important drivers of our socioeconomic development. And like we talked about last week on the show, remember, we talked about netizens and socio-political activism, how the internet as a technology, in a sense, has been a driver of political development in Africa. But we've seen that in Africa, just in the last decade alone, access to knowledge and information is creating a new class of young innovators, and they're seeking to solve local issues in sectors like communication, in education, in energy, finance, agriculture, and many others. So on the show today, we will look at how people on the continent are innovating in technology to make health services accessible, technologies to give whole communities access to clean water, technologies changing how we transact businesses, how we do business, and generally how young people on the continent are continuously innovating around issues that affect them. Let's talk. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Very many people are finding their way abroad than to work in Africa.
I come from Kenya, but I'm studying in Uganda at Makerere University. I think Africans as a continent and Uganda as a country, we lack innovation because, first of all, we don't have good mentors in our institutions to guide us on what we're supposed to do. And I guess that one comes in terms of, you know, the resources that are dedicated in doing a research and the implementation of the technologies. I guess African lacks funding, and most universities just depend on donors, like the Western University, where they are independent and they have substantial funds they spend on their research. So I guess that's why they have strong technology.
My men they want kinda so when I call. If you say we trouble me, I will pen the middle of the mini baby call. Baby do me so baby son. Timen for pin what betty call. Dimitri young cut.
na yen fu ko pepo yen ye
di fa ka. What's up, Africa? You are listening to Upfront, the voice of America.
Na jo abonyum papa ma me fama ko me butu wa basa so na me fa munya papa wudi mu dada wodo.
In case you've just joined us, welcome to it and thank you for being with us today. This is Upfront. I'm Nadia Sami, coming to you from South Africa, and Jackson Vungani is doing his thing in Washington, D.C.
Welcome, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vungani. Now, these days when you speak of technology, many people will think of common gadgets like the cell phone, TV and many other daily amenities. However, we forget that even the most rudimentary tools used by our ancestors were early manifestations of the current technologies that we use today. But again, these were all created to solve an issue that man had to deal with on a daily basis. Now, in the process of innovating, we have a new class of tech entrepreneurs who are transforming the way business is transacted. For example, in Kenya, the story of M-Pesa, a mobile banking service that was launched in 2007 that currently handles over $18 billion in transactions annually. And to tell us more about this story is Mark Kaigwa, the founder of Nendo, a strategy and storytelling consultancy for Digital Africa. And he tells me that mobile banking is used by millions of people in Kenya, from cow herders in the villages to matatu drivers in Nairobi.
Well, I think Kenya has become, I think particularly over the last 8 or so years, a global leader. I normally tell folks here on my trips and for Nendo, I've been saying, oh, well, you can take out your wallet and I'll give you a 30-second head start and I will still be able to pay for something faster than you.
Right.
You know, so I can pick up the check, you know, twice as fast because I'm from Kenya, because I'm part of M-Pesa. That's just the reality of where we are. Now, that said, M-Pesa has had some challenges scaling. Now, those have been come down to like regulation, banking, and a number of other things that have just meant the uptake has not been as electrifying as we've seen with Kenya. Mm. Now, there are some markets that look good, that look promising. But it's definitely fair to say we haven't seen lightning strike with M-Pesa the way it did in Kenya.
You mean outside of Kenya?
Outside of Kenya, right. That is, in terms of mobile money and mobile payments. That said, it has sparked innovation. It has sparked a new way of banking, particularly in Kenya, what we call now agency banking, and different models. Mm-hmm. And so Kenya has been responsible for helping, you know, what are essentially not innovative businesses at all. Telco and banking are not exactly known for being, you know, the hallmark of where the most world-changing ideas come from. But in Kenya, you know, we're seeing that.
Okay.
I think when you look to the future of finance, and particularly now sitting here in DC, one of the things of the last 2 years has been a pretty big story has been Bitcoin. So Bitcoin, I feel, has a world of potential. I feel that if you look at Africa now, the potential is unpacked in the number of possible devices you could use to mine Bitcoin, ways you can choose to use Bitcoin to send money back or pay for it. Even regulatory wise, Bitcoin is not looked at as a currency but as a property, which makes a world of difference. So if you're transacting from here, let's say you're trying to do remittances, right? So, you know, there's
I'm sending somebody money back home.
There's millions of Africans here. They send, you know, probably millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars back.
Close to $1 billion,
there you
actually,
go, back to their respective countries.
Right.
Now, they're using currency to do that and accruing a number of fees. Hypothetically, if they were to choose to use Bitcoin, they would
circumvent the existing financial system,
right,
which Bitcoin is really doing.
Exactly, globally.
So it would save us money, it would also save our people back home money.
Exactly. But the challenge is that you need, you need the intermediaries who can very quickly develop the kind of trust that banks
trust
have.
Trust system, yes.
Precisely, because yes. It's, you know, similar to, and there's some, you know, African communities, you know, the Somali community.
The Somali, one, yes.
You know, the Abshil, and what they've done there, that you see them demonstrate the power of this, of a trust system,
right,
where the network, the people are the network.
But that has been honed for like hundreds of years.
Precisely. So that's why for Bitcoin, you know, you look at a Kenyan, a Ugandan, a Tanzanian who's been sending money back home, sending back, you know, like $100 a week for, you know, for like for 6 years, and then tell them you want to take 100 and pass it through Bitcoin, they're like, what?
Who are you?
Who are you?
What's
I mean, already there's been some people who are trying to say now that, you know, oh, we can deliver this directly to that person's mobile phone. So they don't even have to get the inconvenience of going somewhere and going with a confirmation number,
right,
and then withdrawing it and then taking the cash and going to deposit it at a bank. They don't even have to do that.
Right.
Now you can deposit a part of it as airtime, which you obviously know that they need,
right,
and we'll convert some of that cash towards and some of it as cash. And still, there's the challenge of trust on this side.
On this side. Well, because we've been receiving a lot of 419 emails, man, we have rich uncles that have been sending us requests.
They're $1 billion.
Yeah. So you can understand why trust has not been very...
Hey, you know, we get 419 emails in Nairobi.
But what does that mean for e-commerce in general? Like, if I have a product online that I've been, you know, been trying to sell, or I'm trying to peddle a product to either the diaspora or the local community around me, what is this going to mean for local entrepreneurs?
I think that for Kenya now, or maybe if you look at the whole continent, because that's one other thing I feel we very quickly fall into. And so even the consulting company Nendo now, the way we look at it Africa first, you know, which is, you know, a lot of times you come and tell people, oh, Africa's not a country. Yes, it's a continent, but our ambition has to start there, you know, at a basic level.
A continental level,
precisely. Mm. So one of the ways, I think, if you look at Nigeria, you know, you had the rebasing of their GDP recently.
Mm.
And, you know, you could argue, look at the numbers, 1 in 5 Africans is Nigerian on the continent today. So that said, e-commerce has actually been one of the things that, in terms of the potential of that market to become fully transformed. A lot of people say that, I mean, that there's high expectation that in the next 10 years that e-commerce in Nigeria particularly will be one of the distinguishing things about the country and how it adopts technology. So when you have an example like that, even though Kenya, I guess we are spoiled for choice in how, you know, how developed we are in payments, we haven't seen anything electrifying just yet in payments. So I'd say I'm optimistic about Kenya. Of course, I'm there and plugging away and trying to actually, you know, make a difference and create the kind of technology and consumer products that would do that and help organizations do that. But at the end of the day, Nigeria, South Africa, Egypt, Kenya, you've got kind of these four pillars of the continent that hopefully will send ripple effects to their respective regions.
Okay.
And that's also not to ignore my Francophone brothers and sisters, or Lusophone, also just being polite.
Right. All right,
let me show you. Mark Kaigwa is the founder of Nendo, a strategy and storytelling consultancy for Digital Africa. We had a much longer conversation on many different issues, and you can find the full podcast on our social media platforms, soundcloud.com/upfrontafrica, and on our blog, upfrontafrica.com.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to Upfront. I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg and Jackson Fungani is in Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us. Let's hear some more of your opinions now.
We can develop part by part, but still we don't have that ability to apply it. I'm Kayom Tom from Kampala International University, first year, first semester.
My name is Obulejo Bosco. I'm a Sudanese, but I've lived in Uganda for years. So, to me, Africa has so many resources. Mention them like raw materials, everything. But because they don't have the money, that's when they go into the Western countries to plead for maybe capital and other things to start up, whereby you find that they give them donations and the other funds through strings attached, whereby, you know, instead of coming up with a project whereby they are setting up schools, students who are there can go to school, do the practical work, and at the end of the day or the end of the year, they come up and work for the government for the development of the resources.
Thanks so much for sending in your opinions. You know we love hearing from you. Please also do pop us an email or catch us on Facebook or Twitter to let us know what topics you think we should be talking about. There's a burning issue happening in your neck of the woods. Let us know what it is and we'll explore.
Upfront on the Voice of America. So I'm here with Paul Ndiho, our reporter here at the Voice of America. Paul has been traversing the continent, mostly West, East, and Southern Africa, documenting some interesting stories, and some of them involve innovation around technology. And so, Paul, tell me about some of the things that you saw on your trip, some of the things that surprised you.
There's so much happening on the continent. Young Africans or young people on the continent are doing some amazing things in the area of innovation, in the area of apps development, anything technology. And one of the reasons why I think there is that trajectory, it's because of the internet. You go to the villages, most of the kids that I've run into, they talk about how they discovered some of the things on the internet. They watch something on YouTube or Google it and figure out how to do it. So most of them are not actually reinventing the wheel. They're just using the already existing technology to do stuff. But
to basically customize it to their local needs.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, most of this starts off with an idea. They don't really have as much resources or money or funding when they start.
Yes, you are right in a sense that most of it is an idea, but it's also an idea trying to address a certain problem. For example, I'll give an example of a kid in Malawi who came up with a Padoka charger, Mixon Falwake. This is a guy who comes from a country that maybe by any standard has, in terms of per capita, has the highest number of bicycles per capita than any other country that I know of. Most people use bicycles.
And he saw an opportunity there.
Absolutely. And there's so much money that could be made. So he came up with a charger. He said, you know what? People ride bicycles to work. People ride bicycles to anywhere they are going.
Right.
It's a mode of transportation there. And these people have phones, but they don't have a place where to charge phones. So he said, if I created something that people can use when they are riding their bicycle and charges their phone, it would stop them from going to pay at a kiosk to get their phones charged.
So he created a charger that is part of your bicycle.
Yes.
So when you're riding your bicycle, going to work or running your errands, it's charging at the same time.
Yes, it's actually simple, very basic technology. It uses a bicycle dynamo. You know that thing that rotates around the wheel.
Yeah.
So the same technology that it uses to produce light, the dynamo produces, like, let's say if you have a light on a bicycle.
Right.
So it's the same thing that he figured out how to make it and
produce
optimize
a charge
it. Yes.
For your cell phone.
Yes.
That's a very interesting idea. So how does this kid monetize it? How does he make money off of his invention?
He's running into a lot of challenges, but now I think some of these challenges are going to be addressed. I didn't mention that he won last year's GISTA Tech competition, and I think he took home about $50,000. So $50,000 should give him a good start. I remember when I talked to him, it was before the competition. He was looking for about $20,000, that he had done some feasibility study. He wanted to come up with $20,000 to get him to do research, to get a manufacturer either in China or somewhere who can manufacture those chargers at a low cost and maybe put them.
So they can sell them.
Yes. But at the time, he had not done that. Now, with this $50,000 that he won, chances are that I'm sure he's getting a lot of support. And this is something that can transcend across the entire continent.
It can be used anywhere.
Everywhere. Even here in the United States. Yes,
absolutely. We ride bicycles a lot here.
In gyms, people can charge their phones. So
while they're running.
Yeah.
Okay, so during your travels, you also ran into Max Malipo.
Max Malipo is a company in Tanzania. It has. I was actually amazed by what they've been able to do. They figured out how to use the PSC, the payment system of a computer,
right.
The handheld payment system. So What they are doing now, they are collecting taxes, Tanzania Revenue Authority.
Is that the same as M-Pesa in any way?
No. It's not M-Pesa. But what they do is, for them, you can use it. It has a network of agents across the country.
Mm.
So what people do is they use those services to pay taxes, to pay for electricity, to pay for telephone bills.
So it's a mobile payment system.
Absolutely. And what they have done is they also leveraged it on existing technology. They didn't reinvent the wheel.
Mm.
They just figured out how to... they're all young people. They just came up with an idea of how it can work effectively in Tanzania.
One of the stories that caught my eye was this startup farm that is turning, you know, forms of waste and natural fibers into useful products. Tell me about that.
So this is another young lady, amazing young lady in Uganda called Rusia Orichiriza. What she has been doing is basically turning waste, fiber, banana waste, into paper bags. One of the reasons why I found her interesting is that she figured how to tap into what she really doesn't have to buy.
Mm.
Most of her raw materials, she doesn't buy.
If you're getting free raw materials, yes, your overhead costs go down by like 70%.
Absolutely. And I think that's why she's able to play among the major players.
Yes, who have been doing it for so many years.
Right.
I want to end off our conversation with this South Sudanese student who is making an aircraft.
Well, George John Mail, that guy is a remarkable young man. I first heard about him on Twitter and on Facebook. Then I followed him up, and he's a young high school guy. His dream is to make a plane, and he has actually made a plane that can fly. He has done two prototypes. One is actually at the Air Force Base in South Sudan. And another one, he keeps on trying it, but can actually fly. What he did is came up with two engines. The small engine, it's like a motorcycle engine, but a different, like a Vespa, you know those?
Right.
He configured it and did all the aerodynamics. He's a very, very smart guy. In fact, he wants to do aeronautics engineering.
Right.
When you go to his small hut, he lives in a small hut. He has the banner that says Aeronautics Engineering Research. And when you enter that room, you'll be amazed by what this guy has been able to do.
Welcome to Upfront. If you're just joining us, we are talking about technology and innovation on the continent. The stories of young African youth innovating and using technology to transform life in Africa. And so some governments and NGOs have realized that some of the opportunities that exist in developing countries to encourage tech innovation are not necessarily available in developing economies. So they are creating platforms, incentives, and programs to promote and encourage and support these young innovators. And one of those is the GIST TechEye, an annual competition that encourages young people to use their science and technology-based ideas to commercialize new products and create companies that address economic and development issues. The competition, which you can be part of, ends on the 27th of the month. So, you know, hurry up and submit your ideas. But to tell us more about this TechEye competition, I spoke to Catherine Fa, one of the coordinators.
GIST stands for Global Innovation Through Science and Technology. It's a U.S. Department of State program that began in 2011. And our goal for the program is to empower young science and technology entrepreneurs and innovators to be able to advance their solutions to solve local and global problems. Our program promotes science and technology, innovation, women, and youth. Every year we hold our annual global technology idea, or TechEye competition, which we implement through the American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS. Every step of this competition is set to add value to the entrepreneur. So for our application phase, which closes this Friday, March 27th, we ask entrepreneurs to send a video that demonstrates their innovation. And they can then use this video to show to potential customers or potential investors as they move forward.
So it's both a pitch to you and then also a pitch to potential investors.
Absolutely, yes.
So who can apply for the award?
We work in 86 emerging economies in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Middle East. So if you are a young science and technology entrepreneur between the ages of 18 and 40, you can apply for the competition.
How do you measure that an idea has been really good to be able to warrant the next phase of the competition to the point where they could actually win?
Yeah, that's great. So once we get all the applications, we have experts, both regional experts and experts in the different sectors. So the TechEye competition focuses on energy, agriculture, health, and ICT, Internet Information Communications Technology. And while we have conservation, environmental, water ideas, they usually fit into one of those four sectors. So we have experts from those sectors, and we have experts from the different regions who look at all the applications. But all of the information for what we judge on is in our program announcement. And so we look for, you know, what is the problem that the group is trying to solve? Has the innovation, has the team that's putting this forward put any thought into what the target audience is? Have they done any market research? Is this a viable commercialization? And those types of things. So is this just something that is just an idea that's nice, or is this really going to solve a problem, and is there a market for it to move forward?
Okay, and so what happens when one wins?
Okay, so there are two stages. So our experts review the applications, and then we have a month of global voting for our semifinalists. So this is where they get trained in how to network and market, because they're trying to get as many votes as possible. The winners, the finalists, all come to the Global Entrepreneurship Summit, the GES, which this year will be held in sub-Saharan Africa in July, and they will receive in-person training. They will pitch to a global audience. That global pitching will result in monetary prizes for the winners, and all of the 30 finalists will receive mentorship after the event.
And do you find, after running this competition for a couple of years now, do you find that tech entrepreneurs in general have or face a different set of challenges or opportunities, say, from someone studying business in another field?
We do, and we actually find that even our more science-based innovations face different challenges from our technology innovations. It's everything from finding the type of staff as you enlarge your team that have the right skill set, that understand the mechanics of that science, to also needing people with business skills, to finding the right place that can manufacture what you're making, to finding the right target audience and how to market it to people so that they understand what the science is about. All of that's a little bit different, even though the themes are the same as for other entrepreneurs.
I'm quite sure there's so many innovative ideas that are presented to you or submitted, but all of them are not going to win. What happens to the others that don't make the cut for you guys?
That's a great question. So we do a couple of different things. With everyone who applies will get feedback on their application. So it may be feedback on how they can improve for next year, or as they enter other competitions or move their innovation forward, things for them to think about for improvement. We also have the GIST Network. So if you go to gistnetwork.org, we have mentorship there. We have access to online resources. So anyone who isn't able to move on and advance within the competition can come to the network and get access to others and have discussions and learn more and become part of a global community of entrepreneurs. So we do try to make sure that we are providing real value to everyone, whether they win the competition or not.
Tell our listeners how to submit their ideas.
Sure, happy to. So you can apply through Friday, March 27th, by going to our website, which is gistnetwork.org/TechEye, TECH-I. And I'm happy to chat. We've had some really amazing entrepreneurs, and I really love your show, Upfront Africa. And I know a couple of weeks ago you talked about internet and how it's changing the face of Africa. And one of our winners last year, David Gluckman from South Africa, actually uses his technology, which is Lumkani. It is the idea that in the slums, and you have shack fires that are decimating people, and so they actually use the transmission network of mobile phones to connect the heat detectors together in the shacks, so that when one goes off, they all go off, so that everyone in the community can get out in time.
Thank you very much.
much for listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I would like to thank my co-host Nadia Sam in Johannesburg, South Africa. We would also like to thank all our listeners who contributed to the show this time around. And if you have any questions or comments or want to contribute to the show in future, remember to send us an email at upfront@voanews.com. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is @UpfrontAfrica. Let's connect again next week, right here, same time. On behalf of my colleague Nadia Sami, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye.